goodness.
Sorry, I got you.
Darn it. Okay, we'll call this October 24 meeting of the Water Resources Technical Advisory Committee to order. First order of business, I'd ask the committee to review the meeting summary, the draft meeting summary that was sent out by email to everyone, to review that. And as soon as that's done, consider a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes with the change of the time from 2:05.
I'll second it.
To 5:25, and we have a second?
We have a second.
Yeah.
Motion carries. All who agree, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
One down.
One down. So was there anybody who was not here at the last meeting where we discussed the various watersheds for consideration? I think everybody was here. Okay. Anybody want a refresher on that discussion, or is it clear enough in everyone's heads where we wound up? As I recall, we wound up considering Middle Goose and
Western Hills.
Western Hills.
Yeah.
Visuals. Got mm-hmm. Visuals.
Lots of pretty colors, right?
Yeah.
I still got that too. That would be appreciated. While Dennis is finding that, my recollection is that rather than going to the TLUC with a recommendation of a single watershed, we were going to take both of these then, since I think the group kind of Sure. And I think everyone pretty much agreed with that. Again, it seems like we went around a couple of times with votes and whatever, and I think Western Hills carried the preponderance of the agreement here. Is there anybody want to discuss further other considerations? I mean, I don't want to necessarily open up the door for backsliding, but anybody had any second thoughts about which watershed we should consider, or thoughts on the two that are on the table?
I think we went through the pros and cons of each and laid everything out fairly clearly. And I don't see any reason to revisit.
Okay.
And I thought we had taken a kind of a formal vote as well.
Yeah, we had.
Present the number one that we thought, and then we put the backup number two.
Before we started, you had said that you had spoken with Kevin. Did he have any thoughts?
Kevin asked, he just called me before the meeting to see if I would throw in, when we get to the point of discussing the work scope and how the RFP is going to be framed, he had some thoughts that he wanted me to throw on the table.
Okay. Which I guess sort of brings us to the goal of this, or what I see myself as the goal of this meeting, and that's to talk through the scope of work that we want to recommend to the TLUC, and maybe get into some costs. I'm not sure at what level they would be expecting costs, but what kind of breakdown.
At the next presentation to the TLUC, you probably don't need to have a scope of work or detailed costs. What you need to have is just what we promised them was the selection of the next watershed and an estimated cost, because if I remember right, I believe you would only want November TLAC meeting, because that's what the board moved, and it's not, we took the timeline out, we planned on going in December, and that's where we are now. But at that, there was a flurry of activity over about a day and a half where I was essentially writing the item to get it turned into administration for review, just based on what conversations you had had without actually having the benefit of saying to the committee, hey, look, we need to finalize this. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is written, and that was the approach that was taken, is that we were going to send the recommendations for the two watersheds, with each one having individual cost recommendation, and allowing TLUG to either go against your final recommendation and go for the backup recommendation, or to go for your main recommendation, or to leave it. And that's kind of the way it's going to be set up. So you need estimates for both of those watersheds if you feel that there's going to be a difference in the cost for the two.
Right.
And again, it will be, we will be on the agenda for the December TLUG meeting, which I believe the date is 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Of December.
Yeah. And Dennis, I think you had sent out at some point this month some additional information as relates to the scope of services that had been. Is this verbatim taken from
this? This is verbatim. This was taken from the RFP for the Upper Broad Run project.
Okay.
And this is how staff and the previous work act had put together the scope of services that we wanted to see.
Okay.
Actually, it was two work acts ago.
Right. Do you see any difference in this scope of services than this, either one of these watersheds?
It's not as apparent when you look at the scope of services, but if we go to the cost breakdown from the this was from the actual contract that we had with the contractor that was hired. It was split out into tasks and subtasks based on meetings that we had with the contractor before it was signed. So this part is more specific to what they expected to see in the Upper Broad Run. Some of these things I don't think are going to be there's going to be a different mixture of what is done, like on the field assessments part, that actually may cost more for these watersheds because it's a larger area. It's a considerably larger area for Western Hills.
Mm-hmm.
However, they did their field assessments in three different types. They did the stream and habitat assessment, which was just a physical look at the streams. They walked the streams. They did a neighborhood assessment where they went into individual suburban neighborhoods and looked at some of the things that were going on there. And then they also did an institutional assessment, which they went into the schools, the parks, anything that was, I think there was one large corporate campus that they went into, and they considered that an institutional assessment. We're going to have less of that and less of the neighborhood assessment, especially for Western Hills, as compared to the stream walking part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something to consider.
Yeah, when I saw that, my thought was, irrespective of land mass, I'm sure there's some correlation there. It's if you have, you know, considerably more miles of stream to walk, for example, to, you know, just field study and investigate, that would, in my mind, given the type of work that we're talking about, that in my mind would make it.
But then they also had to bring in someone with a different expertise to look at all of the stormwater management in the area. So that's something that they probably would do less of in Eastern.
So your primes, back for this project, your prime actually had a sub contractor that came in and did that?
No. They just had a different individual.
A specialist of something.
Organization.
Right. So, I guess also when we talked about this a little bit, Dennis, you had Why don't you tell us a little bit about how staff interacted with this consultant for executing this work, and maybe if you've had time to think about it, give us your thoughts on how staff might engage on a future scope award.
My original thought is that staff can probably do any of these tasks with the exception of the watershed assessment. The problem there for us is we have limited expertise in all of the things that it would take to do it, and we have definitely do not have the physical resources to get out and do it. The contractor sent two teams at once out to do all of their assessments, so it was done very quickly because they had the infrastructure in place to do it quickly. We did not here.
Okay. So I think what I'm hearing is you feel comfortable that you have the technical expertise, you just don't have, you literally can't feel boots on the ground.
And certain things we don't have the technical expertise. Okay. Well, Dave has done a lot of screen assessment himself. I have not. As far as, and you've done mostly benthic sampling, I've done water quality sampling, but neither one of us really have a background in habitat, so that would be something we'd be lacking.
Okay.
I wanted to add some stuff on that because I think if this is appropriate time.
Please.
So in the Western Hills, one of the advantages here is this, evaluation of watershed management and how it impacts protection and how it impacts groundwater. So I was talking to Kevin. We have a major change in metrics in groundwater coming with the presence of emerging contaminants. Emerging contaminants are things like pharmaceuticals, PFAS and PFOA. These are things that are associated with fire retardant and fire resistant products. So how it gets into groundwater is, typically through the septic system, septic drain field. So we wash our clothes now with fire retardant products, and that goes into the septic drain field, and that gets into the groundwater. So in Cape Cod and Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard and the places where they're completely dependent upon groundwater in Long Island, New York, but there's no surface water sources whatsoever, they're starting to begin the process of understanding the presence of emerging contaminants in the groundwater and how does that affect. There's no research, to my knowledge, on the presence of this in the Piedmont that I'm aware of in any organized fashion. Now, there may be, and I just don't know about it. But it seems to me that since this is also going to be a part of watershed protection and management, and because the county here has a very good strength, and I haven't talked to Dennis about this, but I'm kind of throwing on to Dennis now, has a very strong groundwater component with a lot of data. I would like to see at least a component of this take the GIS and the database that we collected all these wells for in the Western Hills and evaluate things like nitrate and then do some particular sampling on emerging contaminants. One of the things we found, and I don't know if it's actually come to pass, is that sometimes subdivisions with individual well and septic improve the water quality. Now that sounds funny, but it improved the water quality because the nitrates in the farmland were so high that we were exceeding 10 milligrams per liter in some of the samples that were being taken on this farm or these previous agricultural facilities. One thing I would like to do, and we know where those high and elevated nitrate levels were in the past, I'd love to be able to take some of this new data that came out of the hydro study and then come back and look at it 10 years later, 20 years later, as we are now, and say, where is our nitrogen? Where is our nitrate in some of these wells? And so that would require some specific sampling and some strategic locations. I would like to see us put in a section in this proposal that would allow the county to take the data that we have in the databases, organize that in a way that's manageable, and include the community water systems that are present, which include city, town, add more community assistance to the camp and start working on a plan as to a more quality analysis, a current water quality analysis. So in the watershed, and we can pick strategic, the county would be, and maybe they'd present it to, the county could pick some select strategic locations. I'd like to see what we're looking at in terms of emerging contaminants. Because there's going to be, we know right now the EPA has come out with a drinking water standard of 70 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS combined. I can tell you there's not a single resident in Loudoun County has ever sampled for it. There's probably no community water systems ever sampled for it. There's probably no service, I mean, I don't know if any service water bodies have been sampled. But this is the recommended standard. The state of New Hampshire just adopted it. New Jersey is going forth with theirs. It's a matter of time. So it's just something I'd like to see put into the system. Because this would be a change then in terms of the outside world looking at. This would be a reference document many times over if you come up with the data as part of this groundwork, a part of this assessment. Which I think is what we want. We want to have a leading edge type of product. So that's not to take away any of the surface water. I think the surface water stays as it is. And I think, as Dennis mentioned, I totally concur with him that you stay with the habitat, the stream habitat. You get your consultants to do the things that you can't do, but you have the county pick up the rest of as much as possible on the other elements, so that we can stay within the $300,000 to $350,000 range.
And all of, thank you for that. I think all of that brings up the notion that as I review the scope, now sometimes these documents are fairly, I think you've already alluded to this, they're pretty generically written, and then when you get into, the deep, you're sitting around the table with your client and you sort of translate general English into very specific things that we're going to do. But my review of just the general language here is that all of Part 5.3, which is Watershed Management Strategy on the second page, seems to basically speak to best management practices. At the end of the day, the consultant came back with a recommendation of proposed structural and non-structural best management practices. I guess as I go through this list that we created some time ago, it's a list of these 16 program components. Yeah, if you could find that real quick. I wish I had a date on this, Dennis, and I don't. Sorry. There you go. So we had recommended going forward with sort of a multi-headed hydra of a program here, if you will. There it is. So what I noticed when I was reviewing this scope against what all of those things were, this scope addresses some of them, and it doesn't really address some of them. And so I guess the question I would throw out there for the committee's consideration is, what other items? And I think this is actually listed in the order. We did some Pareto voting thing or whatever. These are not just randomly put up there. They're actually, for the benefit of those of you who may not have been involved in that process, these are actually listed in order of priority and preferences put forward by this committee. Are there things up there that we would like to see reinforced, researched, analyzed, included in this scope of services? And I'll just use, Jamie, your suggestion as an example. This, what you're proposing here as relates to groundwater, probably speaks to elements that I can tell of number 4 and number 8. And
7.
And 7,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So kill a bunch of birds with one stone if we can, you know, if we include something like that in there. You know, I guess from my position, in an absolute perfect world, we would put forward a plan that would address all these, but I think we know that the likelihood, just from a pure fiscal standpoint, the likelihood of all that happening in one fell swoop is, you know, probably slim to none. So I guess I would ask, Dennis, if we can see the all 16 of these somehow laid out, give you folks an opportunity to look back at some of these, and if there are any other elements of our overall proposed plan that you think may deserve consideration, including in the scope, let's have a conversation about that.
Can I ask one?
Sure.
Dennis, if you could go to the top, maybe you could break it in two parts. Take the top 10. I'm curious, from your view, as to the first watershed management program covered, which of the top 10?
Generally, local watershed planning, since these are the components of a comprehensive watershed management plan,
right.
The local watershed management planning, number two, should be as many of these as possible.
Right.
The Upper Broad Run did provide information that directly affected number one and number three. And number six, and in a limited fashion, number nine.
So, not to interrupt you, it didn't cover any aspects of floodplain management, for example, in terms of identifying floodplains for streams where they were considering perhaps restoration projects and that sort of thing?
Well, it's most of this was taken from a mostly a water quality point of view.
Okay.
If there were areas that were identified that were being eroded, they were marked as erosion sites. Whether or not that would play into floodplain management, it would depend on what type of BMP they used to fix that. If they tried to fix that by doing something in the upland to slow down the velocity, then that could be done with probably very little impact on floodplain management. If
sure.
You try to do extreme restoration, then that's going to directly impact floodplain management, because one thing you're going to have to ensure that there's no rise in the area.
Sure, sure. So, reiterate again, this plan you felt like addressed elements of, I think I heard you say one, two, three, and which?
Six and nine.
Six, nine, 10, we really didn't find any places that it looked like the erosion and sediment control program was having issues, but it did look to see how effective it was.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the things that they found that were problematic were illicit discharges that needed to be addressed by the end of the fourth program.
So it sounds like that's almost glove on the hand there, so to speak, that if we were to include, for example, an element that evaluated emerging or microcontaminants, mm-hmm. and we felt like that was going to hit on...
4, 7, 8.
Well, I think we said, 4, 7, and 8.
Yeah, which were not touched last time.
That might be
kind
worth
of, yeah, kind
considering.
Of, kind of adds to the, you know, the overall comprehensiveness of the process, because 4, 7, 8 were not part of it.
And they certainly are issues in that area.
They certainly are issues, and I think, and they're becoming more and more every day.
I mean, that's about the broadest sampling of wells you can get out there.
Yeah, and what's really cool is we've got thousands of nitrate levels already measured.
Now, do you think you can do the town wells, like Percival's
yeah.
town well, and
sure.
is that would that be an issue at all?
That data should be available.
Yeah.
They should have to, they have to monitor. I'm not sure what.
Obviously, they're not monitoring for emerging contaminants.
No.
It's
yeah. I mean, could we?
Well, but nitrates and nitrites,
no,
they
yeah,
would
the
yeah.
phosphorus.
Kind of, kind of
sure.
A little bit of a hard sell is anything that's not regulated is.
You might not get the towns to buy in on that, but you will get the residents to buy in.
Do you need a cooperation from the...
I think if they're looking at protecting, they're looking at understanding where we're at. I think we can make that pitch, but I don't have a good answer for it. But I think it's something that in New England we're starting to see is very important in recognizing that the domestic residential wells don't really understand what's out there and what they're putting in the septic system. We think of our septic system as just septic waste, but we don't think about what we're washing our clothes and putting them in. So these studies that are being done in some of the forest media are demonstrating very clearly that pharmaceuticals, all the drugs we're flushing down the toilet, and all these materials that we have in our clothes and our rugs and our towels and our sheets and everything else that we have is now at price per trillion being concerned as a potential problem.
The only thing I would say is if I were a board member thinking about this, I'd buy into this logic as long as I was reasonably convinced that we feel like we have a sampling plan and sufficient data on contaminants that are in fact an issue for us today. And that's, I was going to ask Ben. Ben, you've got Loudoun Water operates a couple of community groundwater well systems, right?
Yeah, we operate, a couple ways you can look at it. We own and operate about half a dozen, and we also contract operate all of the county's small well systems.
And so for the wells that, and I'm just using Loudoun Water as an example here, but for wells, do you feel comfortable that Loudoun Water is collecting all of the information that from a permit standpoint needs to be collected so that if there are ever issues, or hopefully not issues, you can substantiate that?
As far as permit, we're interested in emerging contaminants as well. Bear in mind, testing for some of them is still a challenge for us. We're interested in them on the water and wastewater side, but I don't know what your experience is, Jamie, but trying to find some labs that run this stuff, and we've looked at partnering with universities to run some things, and it's a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, we have, because we have this issue with St. Gobain in New Hampshire, which has contaminated a whole town, 700 wells, plus the community, plus the public water supply, we've kind of figured out the lab issues. Mm-hmm. And their lab issues are very real, and just mentioned.
What are the lab issues?
Lab issues are that EPA has a certain standard, and then there's a modified standard that people use, and it has to do with the process with which the lab actually evaluates. When you're dealing with parts per trillion, the concern is repeatability process. Is there a process that's been signed up and agreed to by EPA as being the one across the board? And so we've actually, the state of New Hampshire just published in the process of publishing this article on lab issues. And I think we've got it figured out. And it had to do with straight chains and crooked chains, and it gets really down into the particle mass of the product that they're analyzing. But I think we've finally sorted that out. Ben's right, that's a process that is now at the point of being resolved. How do we get a sample analysis that's really accurate and reasonable? We have to report, because of the issues, not only just with, we have three towns in New Hampshire. I'm involved in all three of them, Merrimack, Portsmouth, and Dover. All had to take wells offline because of PFOS, and something that never was analyzed for. So I think we can get around those issues and get there. I don't know if the community, and I can't remember if the community systems have been starting to analyze for the emerging containers, but I'm not too concerned here because the Piedmont and the sacralic soils, I think that's why I'm curious. In a lot of the New England areas we're having problems with, it's very transmissive sand and gravel, ice contact to talus, whereas here we're dealing with weathered saprolitic and more clay-rich, overlying the bedrock and the bedrock. So outside of the karst environments, I think we're going to be better, but we don't know. We just haven't done that. So I think that's why we've added. And maybe we could get Loudoun Water to participate in this program of emerging contaminant assessment. Now, I'm not talking about doing hundreds. I'm talking about, we're going to have to, because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, to do a PFOA sample right now, it with PFAS is about $400 each sample.
A run,
so
yes.
It's not cheap. But if we were able to say, let's pick 20 samples, you know, 20 across the board in strategic locations, I think we could get something new. Be a start. And I think it would be the first. Because I know a lot of homeowners think, well, you know, I'm out of sight, out of mind, I'm drinking my water. And it doesn't really matter.
So before we got to PFAS and PFOA, what are the other, we've talked about nitrates, nitrites.
Pharmaceuticals.
These are all
issues. Now, we may eliminate pharmaceuticals depending on the cost, but pharmaceuticals are a major concern. And Ben said, you're dealing with wastewater too, so everybody's a little bit concerned. You're doing a big artificial recharge down in Norfolk, is it?
HRSD is, yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the arguments we're going to be making is you need to, as you do this pilot study, figure out what's going on when you're throwing wastewater in. What about the pharmaceuticals? What about the fire retardants? The 100 emerging contaminants that have been regulated.
Is that all? I mean, there's...
That's on the front door.
Yeah, that's, the list goes on and on.
We don't have to sample for all those either.
Right.
Anyways, that's what I'd like to see. At least add it to it. Since this guy's got a groundwork report. I just think, Dennis, you have so much data in the county that we can, one of the selling points, I think, to the county board is that we've been collecting all this data, that the county has been collecting all this data. This is an opportunity to actually use some of that data in a watershed-based method. I think we could be creative in how we get that.
Well, not only that, but to consolidate, the county's been collecting data, but there's other data out there.
Sure.
You know, and I think one of the reasons I'm thankful we've got Loudoun Water, you know, sitting in actively on this, on these conversations, is because I think going forward they'll be a great partner in terms of helping with some information like this. And so, I guess I would throw that out there to the rest of you folks. Does this sound like something that, over and above the scope, whatever we determine it should be relative to BMP's structural and non-structural? First of all, I'm going to assume that no one has an issue with moving forward with that piece of it and having wording in this next watershed is very similar to this for structural and non-structural.
I want to try to, I don't know, Dennis, it seems to me that part of this, the things that you guys could do, we might want to take out with this RFP.
Yep.
Oh, no, we don't want to take out.
Not take out, but you're going to define what you guys can contribute to the overall, which would be more than what they did the first time?
Well, what we, I think the way it was envisioned is to try to get together the scope of work, which is not something we need to get to the TLUC at the December meeting, nor do we have to have a breakdown.
Right.
But what we do need to know is how much money needs to be requested to the board. And that is going to be this amount that we will contract out rather than
right.
doing in-house.
And I guess what I was going after is if it's $280,000 on this guideline, but there is more that the county staff can do to reduce that $280,000, and we add additional tasks, say, inverting cabinets, groundwater, or whatever,
right.
Could you envision yourself, you know, reducing this cost by 25% by taking
I think more than that.
Okay.
In fact, of these costs here, there was one other section here that I probably should have mentioned that would make it easier on staff and probably more palatable to the public, and that would be in the public outreach part. Oftentimes, it's better if we hire an outside moderator for mm-hmm. these meetings, just someone who's going to convene the meetings and run the meetings, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't look like staff is the lead on this. Right?
And when you say outside moderator, you mean even beyond your consultant?
Right. Well, our consultant did this for us last time. They could do it again. We could add that into the task for the consultant.
Yeah.
But if the consultant is, if it was just someone who's basically just an environmental group that does assessments and they don't do meeting moderation, then they could either subcontract someone else or we can just make that a separate contract.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just better if it's not someone from staff, if there's an outside moderator.
So with the full force and effect of county staff, let's just take you back to Upper Broad Run. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you feel like if you were to repeat this process today, same watershed, Upper Broad Run, same scope, you have the technical capacity and manpower, you could probably take this 280 down to what, 200 maybe? 150.
That's great.
Okay.
Because we could do all of the desktop assessment principles. So that take that out of 129. Add in some of the public outreach element would be required by someone else. And then the field assessment parts and the assessment of watershed condition. I think we're perfectly comfortable in doing all of task three.
All of task three?
Like 2B and 2C is what you want to consult with.
2B, 2C, and possibly 1A.
And so, what's the size of in square miles of the first study? Let's just say you prorated it for the 2B.
Yeah,
looks like about the third the size of Western Hills. Looks like about the third the size of Western Hills. If you look at the map,
you're probably looking at a factor of three. If that's the way you scaled it, I'd say if you scaled it in terms of stream reach miles, it's probably more than a factor of three.
Right, you're probably right.
As footprint, it's probably three times the footprint of Upper Broad Run. Western Hills is.
Okay, here I added Upper Broad Run into the mix so that we could compare.
What I was saying, though, is just eyeballing it, I'll bet it's more than a factor of three if you start looking at stream reach miles.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Probably closer to a factor of four.
Yeah, I'm just eyeballing it, but that would be my guess. I guess the next question is it necessarily proportional? I mean,
right.
do you get some?
No, I don't think it is proportional. I think you get some, definitely get some bang for your mobilization setup and along.
I think you'll find in Western Hills that there's an awful lot of street reaches that are going to be quite similar to each other, so that.
Seen one, seen them all kind of thing?
Right, it would be easily stratified into
across,
I mean, just, you sample one and you sample one similar. But then you're going to get into the areas, and this is what's interesting about the Western Hills, is a lot of the upland areas are actually in the town first, because it splits the Catoctin and Beach Creek water area. Right. So there could be some interesting things happening there. You still have to do your stormwater type assessments, your neighborhood assessments, but they'll be on a smaller scale.
So that brings up a good point too. Would it be on the consultant to work with the other public entities in that watershed to, you know, for example, get their permits and permissions to do what they need to do, or would the county get out ahead of that and secure the permissions for them?
We assisted them with permissions on the Upper Road.
Okay.
They did the final contacts themselves, but we did a lot of the legwork for that. So I think we probably could do the legwork on getting permissions done in the towns.
Okay.
Especially since we just got familiar with them last week.
Are you still sure?
So rough numbers. I'd be interested in your folks' thoughts on this, of course, but if this original study with the county's full involvement, county staff's full involvement, if this original Upper Broad Run study maybe is a $150,000 contract value, and then you scale that to a Western Hills, what you're probably looking at just for the same scope that you have here is probably, what, $350,000, $400,000, something like that.
You mean before you start doing the groundwork?
Yeah.
I was thinking that would be a lot less than that, but I was thinking that they would get it in, you know, they would get done for two, maybe add more than $100,000 to get the other watersheds, and then add $100,000 for the groundwater, and then you're at $350,000. That's what I was thinking about.
For what we paid for that section of the contract, we were surprised at how many stream miles they did get out from that work. Dave, do you remember how many stream miles they actually got out? I want to say
40.
Yeah. Which I thought we would get 15 out of that amount.
Just getting access is really a challenge. And when you get out in Western, in fact,
Western Hills probably more of a challenge than Upper Broad Run, right?
Going back to the ONI, the stream assessment, it was the kind of first thing that would give us permission to build a reservoir, as for instance.
Wouldn't so get the county?
Yes. I'm not sure where the town of Percival is right now in terms of openness. They just had a chlorine release and a press release. In their public information, we maybe do not copy it. I just got to be honest that the cooperation and communication between the towns and the county is not the best.
I can get you in the Hills, bro. No problem. I think I can get you in the
Hills. The other aspect of stormwater is that we don't have the infrastructure mapped within Hamilton and Percival. Their stormwater infrastructure is interpreted at this point.
Mapped in terms of what exactly it is, GIS location,
and all.
Yeah. So in your GIS right now, on that layer, it's just a blob.
Pieces of it are mapped, but because it's not part of the MS-4, the Diamond County government has not been mapping within the town's formula.
Is there anything that would compel the towns to map within the towns? Probably not. I mean, there's no reason why they would have to do that. So that's data that's either going to be, it's either going to be a holes in our donut, as it were, or we're going to have to ask our consultant to.
But for the purposes of watershed management planning, it's not always imperative that we map every storm structure.
I agree.
I think getting that kind of data from the towns is probably just we have to assume we're not going to do it. Just think that's going to be limited. I don't think Hamilton's going to give the county one piece of information.
Well, Hamilton is actually in our MS-4.
So now.
Or actually, the one.
It is. I didn't know that.
It's a very small sliver that runs out 7.
Really?
Around 10 miles.
How did that?
It's mapped by EPA based on population density.
2010 census created the Hoffman jump.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Well, I imagine that's been fun keeping up with. And by the way, I was just, we had said we, you know, a sampling program like this might contribute to 4, 7, and 8. That was only among the top 10. I go down, I'm looking further. Number 12 was private wells testing. Number 14 was community water and wastewater systems. I mean, we're hitting on
a few.
Yeah, we're hitting on it. So I think one thing coming out of this is unless I've heard otherwise or somebody else has an opinion. It sounds like this group is supporting we get some kind of sampling plan into the scope. We've talked about nitrates, nitrites, emerging contaminants. We don't necessarily need to get into specifics at this point. Provide a list of all of the microcontaminants we're going to be sampling for.
I would add arsenic as one of them.
Yeah, I would too.
We have arsenic in all
of
them.
Right, exactly.
Phosphorus is also a very important component along with nitrogen.
Agreed.
It goes just hand in hand.
So those are, I mean, at some point, I'm sure we'll sit down and, come up with a list of
it would be great to know as much as we can before lithium and uranium, because they ask those questions.
Yeah, agreed.
It's not necessarily that it has to be handled out.
Well, Ben, you had said that Loudoun Water has been mindful of emerging and microcontaminants. What are the specific contaminants that are concerned about on Loudoun Water staff?
We've never seen anything. I mean, in the small amount of sampling we've done, Fairfax Water also does sampling pretty routine as well. We've never seen anything in particular that really gives us cause for concern in any of this stuff, but we know as things go on, the regulations come down, and we always want to be ahead of stuff. So, what we have not really done emerging contaminant work in wastewater, and nobody else around here really has either. But that's one of the things we're looking at. Just as we look at master planning facilities, changing processes, what impact we may have to water quality long term, especially on the wastewater side.
Mm-hmm.
The water side is kind of a little more interesting because you're more concerned. EPA is typically more concerned about your treated water quality rather than your raw water quality. And most of the sampling revolves around treated water quality. Now, you don't know what you've removed in the middle of your treatment process. So it's possible there are contaminants in the raw side that get taken out through the treatment process. Some are more persistent than others, and that's the ones you typically worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything where you have an indicator. If the perfluorinated compounds that Jamie is talking about, those are case in point. The people that see issues there are, what we've seen in our understanding from the rest of the country, is more industrial. Mm-hmm. One of Pennsylvania is one that blew apart everything for the country, where
right.
It was a Navy air base where they were using the firefighting foam for many years and soaked into the ground.
Oops.
Ruined that community's water supply. So we don't have the industry, producing flame retardant stuff. We don't see the industrial discharges. Anything we have would be more residential generated. And we don't expect a lot because of that. Doesn't mean that some of that stuff may not be there, but we've never had any. I mean, like in Goose Creek, we tested for PFOA and PFOS, and we never had detections there.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it might not be more persistent in the ground.
So, what we're finding, same thing happened at Keyes, which was the Air Force base, that they put out a fire with firefighting foam and that got into the groundwater. Interesting enough, in Merrimack, it wasn't a spill at all. It was air emissions through smokestacks.
Mm-hmm.
So this air emissions covered a 10 square mile region and dropped it on the ground, and then rainfall pushed it in, and that's where we had issues. So, but where we're seeing, the other issue is more of because there is no treatment on residential wells, and because all our clothes are treated with a fire retardant, and all your sheets and your blankets and everything else that get washed, your comforters and everything else that you touch, and the carpets, everything you have has some kind of retardant or stain resistant or fire retardant in it. So that gets washed and goes into your septic drain field. So that's where it goes in the wastewater stream. Because it's getting flushed into the system. So typically, I think Ben's right, that in the source water, it's likely in the community system, because a lot of these are so much the towns either, because they pull out the well, there goes this treatment thing, it goes out. You know, that probably isn't going to be an issue. Where it's going to be an issue is going to be where the well, the septic is on the same line as the wastewater septic. You know, the septic is on the same line as the well. And I don't know if it's going to be that case, but we don't have to have a spill to have that be a problem. We just have to have clothes that we wash it. So to give you a sense of how sensitive this stuff is, in order for me to sample for these PFAS, I have to wash my clothes 5 times. Otherwise, I have the opportunity to cross-contaminate and sample. So you can't actually sample for the things that contaminate the water unless you wash your clothes 5 times. It's the way we work with the business community. So I like the fact. I mean, I'm all in on this kind of sampling program. So don't ask me. I'm going to leave it up to the guys.
Well, and that's so. On that note, I'll just let's just go around the room, and if anybody has any thoughts to share, please speak up. Ralph, any thoughts on this?
I agree that I think it's important to establish a baseline where we can, especially if it's regulations that are starting to be implemented over other places in the country that could wind up here.
Yeah, I agree with that. We need a baseline.
And that's always the problem, right? I understand the sensitivity, you know, only sampling for those things that we absolutely have to sample for, but the problem is you do need a baseline. And how much damage potentially gets done while you're, you know, developing your baseline before you actually get the process to a point where you can start doing something about it. That's you know, I think as a technical advisory committee, the onus is on us to recognize that you have some upcoming regulations that are being considered. Looks like it's very likely they're going to move forward. And that we offer some kind of recommendation that it's not just sampling for emergent contaminants or microcontaminants, but there's a sampling plan for other things that already exists here today on a lot of the public well supply systems. We just are recommending it would be helpful going forward, I think, to have data points on other community wells and particularly homeowners' wells, if they'll allow it.
The beautiful thing about that is we have it. It's easy to treat. We found that activated charcoal takes out PFOA easily. It's just a very effective means. It's cheap to do on a residential setting, for sure.
And PFAS as well?
Yeah. Very
farmers?
Is that?
How about pharmaceuticals?
That's a different animal.
Yeah.
What's your experience in the pharmaceutical side?
I don't have a lot of experience yet in terms of where that's going to go and treatment, because there's so many different kinds.
Because I was reading or hearing something about DC's having a, it's showing up the pharmaceutical stuff. So, have you run across that in? Doing
we haven't had an issue with pharmaceuticals yet. I mean, or down further to the south. In part, we don't know because we're not doing the same thing. We don't have no baseline stuff for that.
So the Water Research Foundation is actually doing a study on that right now. Lauren Fillmore, if any of you know her, she and a task force are doing that. It's a nominal fee, basically, to recover their cost for the study. To once they'll produce a report or a book or something. And just because I have professional interest in its outcome, as soon as their findings are available, I'm more than happy to share that with the crowd. So, but I can't say pharmaceuticals are a. It's a real, just like their names these days. It's a real alphabet soup of stuff that you're looking for, and made more difficult is that pharmaceuticals actually are, sometimes it's not the base pharmaceutical that's of concern. You can have binary or even trinary agents where the three different ones floating around in the atmosphere or in the environment separate may not be a problem at all, but when you put them together, you got other problems. Anyway, we were going around the table.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, do we have any prototype or template for this kind of management, like since you've already done for upper broad run, so that we can just, I mean, for the pollutants or whatever it is. Like.
So you're looking for a template of what we're talking about?
Is that in general, about anything like sediments or nitrogen or whatever it is, like, or even this erosion data, stream erosion data. Do you have any prototype or anything that we follow? Like, do we have some kind of analysis between the existing data and the data that we collect? Or
that's a good question.
You have a previous study.
Yeah, good question. We have a data sheet of what parameters were analyzed for in the stream in the first study.
Usually it's
we
just
really have to
simple probe analysis. The more advanced chemicals is done by DEQ.
Right.
Going back to the early 90s, actually to the 70s. It's just 20-some parameters and lab work, similar type things. The recent work in most stream assessment, it's very simplistic water chemistry. Nitrogen, phosphorus, dissolved, or specific conductance, pH, dissolved oxygen, not too much.
And they'll use total suspended solids as a surrogate for sediment.
For sediment. And I'm assuming that we just transferred that into this state. Did you find that there was something missing, or did you feel that was adequate?
Well, the whole advent of benthic macroinvertebrates, rapid bioassessment, is to replace the fact that it's just so difficult to do the full suite of chemistry, which varies
mm-hmm.
by time, varies by location, and looking at a few bugs, you can find out a whole lot more. At least that's what the biologist of bugs
mm-hmm.
believe.
Right. Good point.
And the habitat assessments are kind of along the same lines, sort of a quicker way to look at the stream health overall without having to dig down into what the water chemistry and sedimentation was and so on.
One question I have is, as you get into emerging containers and whatnot from groundwater, is the volume necessary? Because there was a study in Pennsylvania for viruses and cryptosporidia, and they were collecting 400 liters from wells. Is that what you need for?
Yeah. No, for these sources.
You said 400 liters?
Yeah.
I'll drain my well.
Well, that's because you're doing a microparticulate analysis of the pathogen. You have to put it through a filter for 8 hours. You have to collect, we collect 500 gallons. We push 500 gallons through that filter, and then you analyze the filter. So it's not really actually a water sample, it's a filter. So, but that's why you do it. You have to process that. But I'm not suggesting we do pathogens like that. I'm suggesting this be just these kinds.
The only reason I bring it up is
it's a good question.
You'll get more buy-in from the health department people if there's a health component to this groundwater monitoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this would be
a component that they regulate.
Right. Well, they're going to end up regulating. It's just not there yet.
What are you talking about? Year, 2 years, 5 years?
I don't know. It took an act of Congress to get that EPA to get off this noise to give us a recommended limit. I mean, I actually met with our Senator Ayotte and our governor because we had 700 people with contaminated water. We still couldn't get EPA to get off the dime and come up with a recommendation. It literally took the Senate and that committee, whatever she's on, and our governor to go to Washington and say, we have to have one. We got one. In fact, New Hampshire triggered the PFAS standard.
I mean, if I just had to guess, I would say it's probably, if you had a, if you had a standard that was proposed and generally accepted in the technical community today, and you wanted to run it through the typical approval process, and it winds up as a proposed article for Federal Register and so on and so on and so on, you're probably looking at a 5 to 10 year window.
Yeah.
Still, when manufacturing stuff in 1949, we knew it was contamination. It was contaminant in the 70s.
Did we answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Establish a baseline seems to be a pretty strong motivator, I think. So, and if we're ahead of the curve, it certainly doesn't hurt us, particularly down the road.
You know what? And one thing we might be able to do is oppose a sample for pharmaceuticals. I mean, the component that's used to as a precursor, we used to think as a precursor to contamination of gasoline, it used to be benzene, that would be the first thing, and then NTBE, and now I'm dealing with 1,4-dioxane and all these things that are very high solubility. But caffeine is like the litmus test for pharmaceuticals. If you have caffeine in your sample, you probably have pharmaceuticals in it. If you don't, you probably don't.
Hmm.
It seems to be kind of a parallel path. So it's pretty cheap to analyze for caffeine. We may choose to do something like that.
And caffeine doesn't dissipate?
No,
or is it, you know, does a pharmaceutical lock it up or something?
No, just the caffeine is, you know, we all flush coffee down our drains.
Every day.
Caffeine shows up in your drinking water, you probably have a good pathway for pharmaceuticals to get into.
Hmm. All through the same pathway.
I see.
And that's
yeah.
And that's always the trick in these. Yeah. Even when you're talking about benthic, rather than going out and trying to find the exact test for the exact contaminant, if you can draw a reasonable parallel between the contaminant
sure.
and the presence of some other thing that's easier to measure, then that proxy measure makes sense. If I can look for one and it costs $1, or look for it and it costs $1,000,
right.
I'm going to spend some money and time trying to draw some parallels between the it and the proxy so that I can spend $1 on the back end doing my lab tests instead of $1,000. That's just how it works.
Right.
So when the water treatment plant opens, and this can, you can get rid of these chemicals by a charcoal filter, wouldn't the treatment plant take care of it?
So I don't know about the pharmaceuticals. I'm just talking about the
PFAS.
PFAS and PFOA.
Yeah.
Yes, it would take care of it. Yeah.
Use it for a lot of things.
So then we would just worry about the wells and
right.
Okay. But
I think if you found out that 20%, let's just say we take a 20, I don't know, we have to come up with a number, but let's say we take 20 samples and 10% of them have a problem. I think it's probably reasonable that we start thinking about 10% of them. But in 10% might be enough for residents to say, look, I'm going to put a charcoal filter anyways, just in case I'm one of the 10 or 20. If they come up with zero, then, probably looking pretty interesting, pretty good.
Well, I would, that's a really good question. And if we had, say, opted to this time around evaluate Middle Goose, that's a really good question to be answering, because chances are a lot of people down the road who live in Middle Goose are probably going to be served by water coming out of that water plant.
Right.
Western Hills, I would guess almost anyone, if not everyone, who lives in Western Hills is probably on...
But the treatment for... wherever this is, Middle Goose is not going to be charcoal. It's going to be slow sink filtration, I presume, right?
For
the public works plant.
Well, there's not really not going to be much water coming out of Middle Goose anymore, because we're going to build out the topic. So what we're doing is looking, we sit between Mount Leesburg intake and Fairfax water intake when we go live. So we've looked at all the work they've done, and actually we've picked a process that's identical to what Fairfax has. And it is very effective at removing. They don't
Do they have any component of activated charcoal or not?
We feed carbon, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good to know. Probably as a, we'll probably do that intentionally as part of the, that's interesting. Then.
It also removes taste and odor contaminants and things that are very common in reservoirs.
Right. And so you guys pick the same thing.
So all those smaller size organic molecular chains, you've got pre-ozonation and post-ozonation as well, right?
Yeah, so it's one improvement on Fairfax's treatment, but everything else is same.
Yep.
Yeah. All the more reason to do the Western Hills. You don't have to worry about it.
Except for the wells that are there.
Well, again, that was the point I was making earlier. Is that since we've elected for Western Hills, I guess, to be our primary recommendation, and Western Hills, at least for the moment, is not connected to Loudoun Water Central System. So stop me when I start lying here, Ben.
I think depending on where the line falls, we may have one community system out there, but honestly, the county's got a slew of small parks and things like that out there, so that's low-hanging fruit if you do want to sample wells.
Right. Sure.
And it doesn't get you the ones close to the drain fields. I mean, I'm thinking like the Franklin Parks and places like that where the county has small water systems. They're not usually surrounded by drain fields, things that they're parks. So might not be exactly what you're looking for, but it's a start.
And I think what I've heard, Jamie, is you've suggested that you would feel comfortable if whatever matching amount that we want to carry forward in a recommendation, the over and above to do the sampling plan, you're thinking that's another 100 grand?
Well, I think it could be less than that. I mean, I think there's other things. I had actually yesterday banged out number of about 50,000 for sampling, but then
is that just for the lab work, or would that include
collection? Yeah,
somebody's still going to have to take all that, analyze it, write a report on it, and so on. So,
Dennis,
good
he's
luck.
Fully capable.
Analyzing it is no problem, but I can't wash my clothes at all.
So. Get us back and grounded here, Dennis. We were looking for basically scope of work and a recommended cost dollar amount going forward.
Right. We're looking for a recommended cost estimate for both of the water fields.
Right.
I want to mention one other thing, and that's our timeline. Just in case we don't get where we need to be tonight, we actually have another meeting because of Thanksgiving. Next month's meeting is early. So we actually have another meeting before the draft item is due for TLDC. So if we need to finalize anything, we still have an opportunity.
Well, my hope was coming out of tonight that we would have enough to give you direction, staff direction, on what to include as an additional section in the scope,
right,
if that was the way to approach it.
It can also give me an opportunity to maybe get a better idea of what that sampling cost and the analysis cost would be for us.
What did Kevin? Did Kevin have anything in your
discussion? Kevin, he called another. Related. I mean, he supports the emerging contaminants. He that's something he thinks.
Did he want to add anything here?
But he also was at a Virginia Tech advisory meeting today, and he believes that we ought to think about, and it might be too late at this point, but he was very impressed with the watershed assessments that Virginia Tech were involved with in Roanoke. And apparently they have done a lot for a little, and believes that we might want to engage an academic institution into the process, or at least be a part of it. My philosophy, I said to him on the phone, sometimes I get a little anxious about having public agencies involved because they compete with the private sector and they have no overhead, so it becomes really unfair. And so the consultants who end up getting this wouldn't, you know, necessarily be able to do well with that. Because so I said, well, maybe we could put in the RFP that, you know, they could get scored higher if they had a academic institution engaged in part of the process, you know, maybe in a review or discussion.
I would have to check with our procurement officer to see how that would fit on. I'm not sure. I've never seen it done here, but
yeah.
That doesn't mean it can't be. I just have to check and see what kind of rules are there.
I have mixed feelings about it, only because I've had to compete with USGS before, and it's not fun.
They're always, the board is always concerned about that, too. Competition
needs
to be there.
It's completely unfair. Why am I competing with my own tax dollars to do the job that I can do for less money? But anyways, so that's what he, and I understand where he's coming from, and I told him I wasn't probably going to be as eloquent as he is, and he may want to share that a little bit more. But he said, I'm not married to it, I just wanted to throw that out. So Dennis, going back to this number, I mean, here's my back and napkin scenario is that we double, you're at 150, we double we had 90,000 or double the watershed analysis, and you have to consult and figure out how to do it. So that comes out to be, you know, 90,240, and then you add $100,000 to the groundwork component of the 350 and or 340. I don't think we can get too much more than that without having everybody have heartburn, and so I think the number that we got to come up with is somewhere between 300 and 350.
It's kind of scalable in there anyway, depending on sampling numbers and things like that. So you can
numbers, the staff input, and how much time they're putting into it versus the consultant.
So I don't know what the expectations of the board is, but you can kind of scale it to fit that. It just may not be as many as you'd like. I don't know.
Right.
But
I agree. Yeah, that's good. I don't have a good handle on surface water. No one's surface water matters. So, you know, it takes the bag, you kind of time fish. We do environmental assessments up in New Hampshire. It costs us $8,000 for a watershed. But, you know, I don't know how much more they're doing, you know, here than what we're doing.
Well, certainly. We could toss numbers around, but I think there's some, we'd like staff to spend some time doing a little research on cost for the assessment and give them an opportunity to, confirm what we've learned here about what kind of dent, so to speak, they could have put in this original study's costs and so forth. So I'd like to see a summary of that when we come back into our next meeting. Of research that's been done on costs for a sampling plan, and then give staff an opportunity to revisit, if you deem it's necessary, your estimate of, let's call it, dollar value of staff involvement in the next watershed plan going forward. Right. So I think we've said 300. We've only talked about Western Hills tonight, by the way. So I do agree, Jamie. You're probably in that ballpark, 300 to 350. I could always sit here. I think we could all sit here and just dream up ways to drive that up. But I think that's a reasonable.
I don't think we're in a period in time in history to expand it too much more than that.
I would agree with that.
And I think we should think about, just so you have some guidance on this, I'll send you some information on Eurofins. That's one of the main labs that's doing the PFOA analysis and analytical services. And so you can get some ideas of cost. And then I think from this group, we could say, we would like to see ours leak, people look at what the capping is, look at maybe what the pharmaceuticals as a cost might be. And I'd like to see it at least start off with a 20 sampling as a background. I don't know if we need to do more, but that would be kind of a minimum.
You mean one sample at each of 20 locations?
Yeah.
Or 20 samples per location?
Well, it'll be a number of samples per location, so whatever we can afford, but starting off with 20 locations with this background arsenic thing. Not MPAs. arsenic and PFOS, the perfluorinated compound suite. They do 10 of them for the same price.
And what about Middle Goose? And if we were going to, it's a smaller watershed, but I think it's like Upper Broad Run. I think we're going to get a little more diversity in the development, the build out, you know, what some of the considerations might be in terms of the, when you get down into the details of the scope of work. I would guess that the range that we threw out for Western Hills, Middle Goose might be something in that same range.
You probably have groundwork.
You have some, but not much.
I think we decided you might have some, just not much. Yeah. Is that enough to go on for now, Dennis? Do you think we can get to the end of the trek by the end of the next meeting if you've got we've got so far?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think I didn't see anything in this scope of work that I wouldn't recommend for Middle Goose. I think, and that's just my opinion. I think we're probably going to see some kind of blend between Upper Broad Run and Western Hills. You probably still need to do some sampling if you're going to be true to that concept, but I don't think you're going to need a near as robust a sampling plan for Middle Goose to properly characterize it.
Just so do we break out a different cost for Middle Goose versus Western Hills, or do we look at what total samples that we take and some of those adjustments?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, would we go in and say, you know, we recommend that you consider Middle Goose as our priority recommendation, cost range of X to Y. If you decide to go to our second recommendation, which is Western Hills, we're going to back it down to Middle Goose, and here's another, you know, it's a different range from this to that. Another way to do it would be we recommend Western Hills first, or failing that, Middle Goose. Cost for each of those might be smallest number to largest number.
I think that'd be the best way to do it.
If you give them a lower number on Middle Goose, you're going to get Middle Goose.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Well, you but it, it, yeah. We say, yeah. I could see
this
the
is kind of the range for that study. Yeah. And we can do X or Y.
But I'd see the studies coming up basically a wash. It's just that you'd have different emphasis in different areas.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that keeps the price.
Keep the price the same. I just think it would be more one and the other. That's just
because we know if we come on $300,000 or $350,000, we're going to be approved for $300,000.
Right. So going at $325,000.
And that would be how much of an increase over the last one? $280,000, you said?
Right.
Yeah.
We are budgeted at $300,000.
I will say that part of the justification for the Upper Broad Run as a pilot project was to be able to scale this down, and I think it's going to take some. You're going to be very clever in the way you word this if they look at something that's supposed to be cheaper and it's not.
That's why I think we want to do the groundwater part, because we get to tell them we're doing something completely new.
Well, but that does bring up a good point. You know, we're actually recommending, for well and good intentioned reasons that we've talked about here, in actually broadening the scope a little bit, because the plan as a whole is more robust than perhaps it was when we first went into Upper Broad Run, right? And so we feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't recommend an additional scope item, especially when you're killing so many birds with one stone by doing, you know, some. So yes, it's a little more cost, but you're getting so much more bang for your buck.
Right. I think, yeah, and that's what I was getting at, is the justification of this is going to have to be worded very well.
Right.
So that they don't just see, well, this was supposed to come in cheaper.
Right. It's scalable because it's larger. That's right. One thing in our favor. And adding another whole component that was not looked at
So you think the board looks at it that way? I thought they would. I thought we left this last time. This is kind of what you would expect to see.
They were expecting to see the ability to for staff to take over more of the project, and for the management plan to be cheaper. Now, I think what you're suggesting here is, because of the scalability and because of the added component, that you're actually, for the same money, getting more study done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think will be more difficult to justify. I think it'll just have to be very craftful in the way it's.
And so I think we need to, let's not necessarily document it all right now, but I think we need to be prepared that at the end of the day we wind up with, you know, task four, right, in this box, and it's got some dollars out here or whatever. We need to be prepared for the possibility that they come back and say, well, lose the sampling, we'll move forward with this. And that, I think their expectation would be that it would be less, if not considerably less, than the $280
right.
they spent.
Okay.
We're gonna have to be, as bad as I think we've all agreed we want to do the sampling part of it, we got to be prepared for that possibility.
And I also think showing the size there is a big issue. So they're getting more from the bank, mm-hmm. like you said, maybe three times as the number of stream miles than they got the first time.
One of the questions that I had for you, Dennis, in my comments in the original the draft that you sent out, I was just curious what staff's view of some of the deliverables that were actually produced in this study. Did you find some of those deliverables more useful than others? Did you find some that were just whatever, and now they're just collecting dust on a shelf somewhere? I mean,
I think the written deliverables were well done, and I think they've been well accepted by those that are interested in looking at what was there.
Right.
I think they've been useful for those people. I think what was not, as far as deliverables that we put in there, because you're always wanting community outreach, but the community outreach attendance for these was dismal. I mean, it was terrible. We would get 3 or 4 people to show up for something that we put on for 3 hours in the evening in a service area somewhere.
Huh.
Now, I felt like we did all of the avenues of advertising that you probably could do for something like this. I mean, you're not going to go on my television and ask for it, but certainly we did as much as we could.
You could have, you know, like the guy at the Pulte Homes, you know, he stands out there and he spins the little signs around.
You will get a lot. If you start talking about residential home water quality, you're going to pack a house.
And I think,
because people are all interested as to what am I drinking now, and they don't know.
Virginia Tech puts out free three water sampling clinics every couple of years ago, if I remember. And I think last year, offering free water samples.
Not free, reduced.
Oh, reduced, okay.
It's only
and then free
$40 or $50 for a $100 test.
Yeah. What, 45 people?
For the whole county?
The whole county. And you're getting the same 45 people every time. So it's
what is difficult to get 700 people showing up. I mean, we're packing high school gymnasiums.
Well, you got their attention. They have no water.
If there's something to get their attention, there's some sort of a crisis that hits.
Yeah.
Well, what we did find for community outreach is we thought outside the box for one meeting, and instead of having a community meeting where we advertise and brought people into a library for the evening and sat and did presentations, we went out to a family stream there that they held out in water. We brought the consultant, we brought the whole crew, and we had hundreds of people
really
coming by, and we're very interested. Now, certainly we had a kids' activity going on too,
right?
Yeah. But the amount of people that were actually interested in what was going on was very good.
My personal view is that since all of that happened, we've had this thing called Flint, Michigan. And the problem with the problem with water and water chemistry, whatever is causing it, whether it's this or arsenic or nitrates or whatever, I think you've got, just my spider sense tells me that we're going to get a little more attention on it this time around with some, and it's, you know, I'm sad to say that, actually, but I think we'll get more attention. I think I heard earlier there were some folks who had to bail at 5:30, so should we call this meeting to an abrupt end and do some follow-up?
Yep.
All right. Meeting adjourned.
So much.
Very good. Very nice. One thing I think we're going to get some political, I do agree with some political support, is there is this olive branch that we want to be able to get to Western Iowa.
What's the genesis of the...